Hello, my name is Cornell Green, and I am the Failure Guy. Welcome to the podcast. On this episode of the Failure Guy podcast, my guest is Ralph Watkins, founder of NASCS. Ralph, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the conversation.
Thanks, Cornell. It's great to be here today. I've been looking forward to this.
Yes, as have I. And for those out there in podcast land, I'd like to say that Ralph is a very unique guest here on the podcast. He is the first guest in the history of the Failure Guy podcast that I not only do not know in real life, but he does not come as a personal referral. Ralph, why don't you tell the folks, how did you even come to end up here as a guest on the Failure Guy?
How did I discover you? Well, I've got to, so I'm a bit of a tech geek myself. You know, we're sharing here just before we got started what you've been doing for 35 years in your profession. And I tend to be an early adopter of technology and things like that. So I recently wrote a book, and we're going to be talking about a number of the things from that book in this discussion today. But I'm thinking, how do I, you know, like the old fashioned book tours, you know, I self-published it. I don't have a publisher out here booking me and traveling around and all that kind of stuff. I'd like to get on some podcasts. I actually was listening to a podcast. James Clear, right? The guy that wrote Atomic Habits.
Yes.
And he was a guest on the Tim Ferriss show.
Yes. Yes.
4-hour work week. Right.
Yep.
And so they were talking about James's book, Atomic Habits. And he was asking, how in the world did you get this traction to get your book out to so many people? And he said, well, I got thinking about podcasts because that's the new version of the book tour.
Right.
He said, so I made a list of all the podcasts with whose listeners I thought my book would resonate. And
right.
then I just reached out to him and talked about it. And I'm like, well, that's cool. How do I find these people? So I was looking at LinkedIn. This is great.
Right.
And so there's all sorts of people. There's millions. I don't know how many people are on this. So that would take forever to try and sort through that. So I went over to my good friend Gemini.
Ah, yes.
Gemini, AI. Which is Google's AI, and I created a Gemini gem, which is a specialized AI for a specific task.
Right.
And I said, okay, I'm hiring you as my podcast researcher and publicist.
Hmm.
And here's my book. I uploaded the book, right? Here's my story, because elements of that are spread all through the book.
Right.
And I want you to go out for me, and I want you to research podcasts, same criteria, research
right.
podcasts whose listeners this would resonate with.
Right.
And I need to know the decision maker for the podcast. I need their LinkedIn profile. I need to know what they've talked about on a recent episode. And I want you to craft a letter to reach out to me with them. And boom, I'll reach out to those people via LinkedIn. And and you're in the list.
Wow,
and that is how I discovered the Failure Guy podcast.
Okay. And folks out there listening to this or watching this on YouTube, take note, because it's easy to become a doomsayer and say, oh my God, our AI overlords are taking over and it's going to put everybody out. And first of all emerging technologies are disruptive. I sort of feel a little guilty because the pandemic shutdown really altered things for a lot of people. But as I basically AI work from home, self-employed guy, and I now specialize in developing web platforms for solo entrepreneurs, small businesses, and not-for-profits. So my business actually went into a boom cycle during the pandemic shutdown. So I was feeling kind of a little guilty. It's like, here I am as a technology guy, and I'm sort of benefiting from something where a lot of people are kind of suffering. You know,
you had survivor's guilt.
Yes. A whole lot of it. Definitely. But I had to remind myself that just like, it's not the tool. Like I can use a hammer to put up a wall, or I can use a hammer to smash a window. It's not the tool that makes the difference. It's how the tool is used. And
correct.
You just had a very excellent breakdown of how to utilize this. Because, you know, let's face it, a lot of people use AI to do the thinking and the working for them. If I see another, you know, a thing in my Facebook stream or my YouTube stream about, hey, write a book, just let AI do everything. Hey, make $10,000. Like, no. AI written books are slop. They're garbage. And it's so easy to see what they are. You can, however, like you said, use the AI to do the research for your book, or to do the outline for your book, to take you from the blank page to a first paragraph. Because as you know, as an author, that's the toughest thing. You have in your mind, you know what you want to do, and then you're sitting there looking at that blinking cursor, and it's like,
I got nothing.
Yeah. How do I start this? Once you start and get in the flow, but getting that first sentence, that first paragraph, that first page, that first chapter, that's always the toughest part. But
yeah,
I would like you, notice that when I introduced you as the founder of NASCS. I would love for you to tell our audience what the name of your organization and what that stands for.
Well, I got to give a little backstory first then. Okay.
Yes.
So, I'll just give a couple of hints, but then get more to where the name evolved. So I went through a very traumatic time back in 2007 and 8, and changed my life, redirected, changed the person I was. That's kind of what the book talks about. But it took, frankly, years to process all this and see where I fit into this larger picture. Well, back several years ago, my wife and I were at a business event out at Lake Tahoe. And anybody that hasn't been there, you know, the state line runs right down the lake. So the east side of the lake is Nevada. The west side is California. Wow. We were there a day or at least. So we just took a day and drove all the way around the lake. Huh. And it's cool. And there's little towns all the way. So there's little cool things. And they operate doing different things all different times of the year. Well, we went over, we're up in northwest portion of it. We went into Truckee, California. If you've never been to Truckee, it's like an old cowboy town. Mm. Like they still got like the, you know, the little wooden, you know, sidewalks in front of the shops and that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's been largely restored, and now it's a bunch of really cute little shops. So we got some breakfast, and we went into the store, and they got all these little tchotchke things that my wife is looking at, and she loves those. And I was drawn right to this sign somebody had made, and with a wood burning kit, it was like rough wood, and they had burned into it, "Shit Creek Survivor."
Huh.
Right, and I'm like, that's brilliant. Now I need to get, you know, well, I don't have any way to carry it. I don't have whatever, but that's, I'm going, oh, there's something there. That's a thing, right? And so because it's me, I've been up that creek,
yes,
and survived and come back, right? To tell about it. And so I'm also a domain junkie, right? So so whatever I'm working on, let's get a domain for it, right? Because it's easier than, well, like, I send a link and what's the link?
Yeah.
Oh, it's long and ugly and right. No, a domain, easy to speak. Boom. So I start looking for shitcreeksurvivor.com. Always use a .com. They tell you always use, right? And like, well, it was taken.
Mm.
Who took it? So I put it in. There's nothing there, or just a really, really horrific website. It was like
domain parking, know, or just some one page crap.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking, well, other derivatives. Let's see. What about what if it was bigger than that? What if it's not just me as a survivor? What if there's a group? What if there's a group of us, like an association, right? The National Association of Shit Creek Survivors.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Brilliant.
Oh, boy. But that's too long, right? Oh, I wonder if that acronym's available. NASCS. Oh, and if it's going to be an association, see if .org is available, because that lends credibility. And, you know, that sounds more like it's not, we're not just selling a widget, right? This is a place where people can come to work together and for healing and for advice and counsel and mentorship and what have you. So NASCS.org was available. I'll take
Bingo.
It.
Bingo.
So that is where that came from. So that is the National Association of Shit Creek Survivors.
Yes. And I love it. Having looked out at your website, I like the fact that you don't, like some people would have SH exclamation T or something, like, you're like, No, this is Shit Creek, bro. If you're here, you know what we're talking about. You've been up that creek, and sometimes you ain't even had that paddle. So,
you know, it's funny you should mention that, because I started with that.
Mm.
And when I was thinking about the book, I'm like, is that going to be too raw? Are people, certainly at some point, somebody is going to come along and go, you can't do that. And I came from a conservative Christian background, right? And I know there's a number of people that are going to go, you wrote what? What is that? Are you?
No,
what?
Yeah. I'm sure
what happened to you?
People that are kind of like, Ralph, really? Really?
There are, although a surprising number of them were like, dude, that is awesome. I would love to read that book. Yeah. And so I started it with the exclamation, just what you're talking about. In fact, when I was talking to AI about it, was, is that cool? Could I just say the word? Well, you know, the subtle art of not giving an F, right, has sold like 2 million copies. Well, that is an F asterisk CK.
Right.
So I played with a couple things like that. And I'm like, you know what that looks to me like is somebody who wants to tell a story, but doesn't quite have
the cojones.
To just step up and call it what it is. So if you're going to do it, do it. Look, be real. Go. So in fact, that sort of leads me to I have this governing principle in my life. There's a quote by Cicero in Latin, esse quam videri, and it translates to be rather than to seem.
Ooh, bravo.
Isn't that
bravo.
Rich?
Yes.
I can't, that was Cicero. I can't take credit for it, but I looked at that and I went, man, if you could do that like all the time. And so even on the title, I'm like, well, am I trying to seem like something, but don't have the guts to do it? Or am I just going to be what I am? So,
Because that's what I said. If you're up Schitt's Creek, you're not mincing words.
Okay. That's right.
And as you said in your profile in the onboarding form that I have all my guests fill out, one thing we have in common is that the subprime mortgage meltdown era kind of threw a spanner in the wrenches, as they say. You know, I was working for, and you might be familiar with them, having been in the real estate market. My last full-time employer was the architectural design firm Charles Guathme, Guathme Siegel and Associates. And Charles Guathme being one of the New York Five, you know, love that job, six-figure salary. And I'm a self-taught IT guy, you know, started at Lehman Brothers, not my fault, as I like to say, doing server support. Like I said, we set up the networks, what they did on the networks, we take no responsibility for. But that was really a crash course. Like I say, I have a graduate degree in OJT. You know, it was on a pass-fail system, where if you pass, you got your next paycheck. And if you failed, there's the door. You know, and so worked my way up, you know, IT manager, everything from the firewall to the desktop inclusive, the whole environment. Loved the job. Woke up on Mondays looking forward to going to work. You know, and then, of course, the subprime mortgage meltdown. And when the real estate market crashes globally, who are you designing buildings for? And so they laid me off. They laid off 12 architects first, but then they finally had to let me go. And I shot my resume around, and every job offer wanted me to do 4 job titles for 80% of 1 salary. And that's why I went into business for myself. I'd still be at that job if it wasn't there, and I wouldn't be doing this. But I decided that I had to go into work for myself. And like yourself, I'm a self-published author. My first book is entitled Do Business Better, Why Small Businesses Fail and How Not To. Because as I say in the introductory chapter, 2 years of steady referrals almost ruined my business. And why do I say that? Because before I even got fully laid off, I got my first private client. I got steady work from them. I got referrals from them. I got referrals from referrals. And for 2 years, the phone rang off the hook, and I just answered the phone and said yes and took the next job. And that was great until the phone stopped ringing.
Yeah.
And I realized two things. A, I was not the one making the phone ring. And B, I didn't know how to make the phone ring. And I realized that for those 2 years, I hadn't been doing business. I'd been doing work. Business is getting the work, not doing the work.
Right.
And
correct.
That took a long time. That took another couple years before I got that lesson down. So
that reminds me, I got to throw this out real quick. My brother-in-law, whom I love dearly, he and my sister have been married, you know, well, we've all been married, geez, 40-ish years now, right?
Wow.
So it's, yeah, grateful for all of that. But we both went to the same school in Tampa, University of South Florida.
Okay.
And he was recruited out of there back in the 80s, early 80s, by Reynolds Aluminum.
Oh, my gosh.
Doing sales for Reynolds Aluminum. And so now I was doing I was doing sales for Smith Barney.
Oh.
Right? I mean, smiling and dialing. Mm. Right? Like, we kept track of our dials, of our hellos, of our leads, of our, you know, like, best day ever in terms of numbers. I made 629 dials.
Wow.
248 people said hello, right? And right. and I added 40 people to our buyers list. Right. Right. So it's like that was if you're either selling them or you're being sold. This is boiler room. I mean, this is hardcore.
That was before the days that there was any such thing as a CRM software. Basically, your mindset had to be the CRM.
Yeah. Well, you know, the guy that I worked for actually had a super rudimentary database.
Hmm.
But it was all DOS, you know, and very, very clumsy. There was no graphical interface at all.
No.
And he was uptown because he had a computer, you know, of his own. Yeah. So now I didn't realize at the time that what I was selling, muni bonds, paid the absolute lowest commission of anything I could possibly sell in the whole place. But that's another live and learn thing. Anyway, back to my brother-in-law. We're someplace, I think we went visited them, we went to church, and but he says, oh, I do sales for Reynolds Aluminum. Like, dude, if they call you, it's not sales. It's order taking.
Yeah, it's fulfillment.
It's fulfillment. That's right. So hey, if you have somebody to talk to, you're in business.
Yes.
If you don't have somebody to talk to, you're unemployed.
We have
coached mortgage loan officers for years in, you know, it's ongoing parts of the conversation. The person who makes the money is the one who can make the phone ring.
Yes. Oh, I learned when that phone stopped ringing, I realized that I was not that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
tell us about your history up to 2007.
History up to 2007, I had been involved in, I've always done sales. It's like kind of the only thing, like managing people is not my jam, right? It's like, give me something good that helps people, that's good for them and good for me. Let me talk to them about it and help them buy it rather than sell it to them, right?
Exactly.
No, I want... So something that I'm actually helping things move in the right direction. So I worked in a furniture store, high end, you know, teak, rosewood, leather, Italian, imported Italian leather. Like, none of us who were worked there could afford to buy anything we were selling. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, when people would come in, I was engaged with them. Oh, so cool. What kind of work do you do? Oh, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a whatever. And I swear every fifth person, oh, I'm a financial planner. Oh, I'm a stockbroker. Oh, I'm a financial advisor. Oh, I'm going, okay, I got to learn more about that because all these people, they can come here and buy this furniture, right? And I can't, right? So actually, while I was working there, studied up, got my Series 7, and which is securities license. And then some other... associated licenses that go with that. And then I began working for a guy that I met in a home group Bible study who was a successful stockbroker at the time with Merrill Lynch. He was making a transfer over to Smith Barney. And so I went to work for him. So I did that for a period of time, realized I didn't care for that business, at least not the way that these giant wire houses were running it, because it was not really what's in the customer's best interest. It's like, here's the new financial product we're selling. Get out there and sell it to people.
Yeah, basically hustle.
Hustle it. Well, what if they don't, you know, look, that's how we roll, right?
Yes.
So I left there.
Make them say yes.
Make them say yes. Yeah. Again, you're selling or you're being sold. I wound up through a couple connections over with Prudential Life Insurance, and never really cared for selling life insurance, but yet that's where my road led, you know, just is how things. And so I had some success with that. So I did that for probably 5 years with them. I was a, you know, $1 million round table level,
Nice.
yeah. So that was kind of cool. And wind up moving from there. I accidentally got into the mortgage business. This the 19, 1996, and really developed an affinity for the mortgage business. The thing I loved about it most is that there was no health questions to ask people. Well, there was financial health questions, but not physical health questions, you know. Not only that, they didn't recapture commissions like they did in the insurance business, you know. So you didn't have clawbacks. So in 1998, my wife and I started our own mortgage company, and we quickly moved into we just kind of gravitated toward private mortgage. When I started, I didn't even know what that was. Somebody says, hey, can I put out money on a mortgage? I have no idea how to do that. I just get them from Countrywide. I write through, whoever the big company is, right? Well, then I kind of looked, found the curtain, kind of peeked behind the curtain. I'm like, the people making the money in this industry, there's people who aren't writing loans and they're making way more money than I am. And I'm doing the work. And there's a curtain there, and I don't know where the curtain is, and it's invisible, but it's there. So I set out to find that curtain, and I found a curtain. Didn't know what stage I was going to end up on. Okay. But we wound up gravitating toward private lending. Our niche became real estate investors, fix and flip, small contractors that couldn't get bank financing. And I financed all that with private money from John Smith and Marilyn, Good and Joe Blow, right? And all these people who didn't like the returns they were getting from banks, they could come here, they could put their money with me, they would earn 15% on their money because this was hard money. These were not consumer loans, right? So along the way, we developed relationships. We wound up taking some deals back that didn't work well. It's like, well, what are we going to do with them? Well, I had a friend who was a contractor, so with the two of us actually started a construction company, and he was our contractor, and we would take over these properties and complete them and sell them. And then we had an attorney that we used for people who didn't want to make their payments or
Well,
weren't making their payments.
yeah, there's always
And
that.
she came one day and said, "Hey, have you guys ever thought about opening a title company? You know, that's funny. Funny you should mention that. I've thought a lot about opening a title company." So we opened a branch of a First American Title, right? So we had a mortgage company, we had a construction company, we had our own title company, we had a real estate holding company, and so all of this was gaining momentum and doing. We had about 14 employees, had quite a number of properties, and that's what it looked and doing well. I mean, it felt like it was almost like, okay, well, here I'm in my late 40s, and now that we don't have to worry about money anymore. Because it was quite lucrative. It's like, well, hey, what do we want to do with the second half of our lives? You know, this is, so we're kind of praying about that. And we loved helping people at the church. And we were, you look at it and go, wow, that's not, in fact, laugh at this now because people go, what? Right. So we wind up buying a cabin in the mountains in Tennessee, which is, I don't live in that cabin, but I live at that lake now. Okay. This is in 2006. So we bought this cabin. It's like, wow, from St. Pete, Florida, that's a 12-hour drive. That seems kind of, my wife says, hey, you used to fly when you're back in high school. Why don't you go back and renew your license and maybe we could fly up there and one takes a long get there. Oh, that's a good idea. So I went, I re and I finished my private pilot and I, well, you got to get an airplane, right? So
Well,
we,
I would think so. It's like this kind of, boy, are my
hello.
arms tired.
So our in-house CPA, our outside accountant, they both said, yeah, by the way, you need the write-offs. So yeah, that'd be a great move. Go ahead and buy that airplane. So we bought, so I buy this 2007. I mean, we go to Independence, Kansas to the Cessna factory and take it as it's rolling off the assembly line. This was, yeah, like a beautiful Cessna 182 turbo. It was crazy. So there's all this stuff. And yes, we actually flew it up to Tennessee and once, but yeah, that happened. Well, this was early 2007.
Oh.
Yeah. As the right before the wheels came off. And part of that thing was that we're not just spending money on an airplane. They said, no, take it and put it out here. Get it, the guy that runs the fixed base operator, because he'll rent it out for you. And in a
Oh,
plane like
okay.
that, everybody will want to use. And so
Sure.
you'll fly for free.
Right. Though they don't,
What
the
a great
plane will pay
plan.
for itself. Yeah,
The
that
plane
made
will
sense at
literally
the
pay for
time.
itself. He says, I'll absolutely keep that plane rented for at least 90 hours a month. And it'll, great, beautiful. Yeah, that didn't happen. So instead of not renting a plane for the next phase of what I wanted to do for $2,500 a month, instead I bought a plane and had a negative cash flow of $3,500 a month.
Oh my gosh.
That was nice. Yeah. But with all the private lending that we did, as the market changed, what really flipped, it was like you couldn't build houses fast enough, you couldn't rehab them
Right,
fast enough. There
right.
was buyers coming out your out of our ears. I mean, it was everywhere.
Yes.
And that flipped almost in an instant. And then all these people who had been buying houses decided, no, we're ready to think things are looking scary and shaky. So boom, now they quit buying, and then there was a glut on the market of
Right,
houses.
right. Everyone's selling and no one's buying. Kind of doesn't
Exactly.
work out.
Yeah. And so now my whole market is investors who have made a business or have business projects of buying these houses and flip, and now they can't sell them. And they're going, okay, well, I have so much money, I can make my mortgage payment on my own house where my wife and my children live with me, or I can pay the mortgage on this thing that Ralph set up for me. Yeah. Sorry, Ralph. I love you, but that's not working out right now. And so in the space of about 90 days, we kept figures. Yeah, we kept figures. It seemed like maybe it was longer. I don't know, but it seemed like a week, right? But we had a very low foreclosure rate, loans that actually went into foreclosure. And the reason for that was when somebody was in trouble, I would be in contact with them immediately. We would figure out a way to help them do something. I'd connect them with a realtor so they could get it sold. I'd take the house back, I'd finish it myself, or we do something, right? And because I'm always protecting my private investors, the people who bought the mortgages. Because if they're happy, they'll keep putting money out.
Unlike the global financial market, they weren't
Yeah.
doing that at all.
No, they weren't doing that at all. Although, people have told people about our lending. They go, oh, so you're like, were you subprime? I'm like, oh, no. We were way below sub. We were way below subprime. Subprime was way up here. And we were like the soft underbelly of the lending underworld,
You were the catfish of
Yes,
the
the bottom
mortgage.
feeders. That's exactly right. But, when you managed it well, we got to where we actually, my first client ever was my brother, different brother-in-law, but his father. And he sat with me one day and said, hey, I got 25 grand. I like to put it on a mortgage. You know how to do that? Hank, I got no idea how to do that, but let me do some homework. Right? So I do some homework and I'm like, yeah, we got connected with a guy who taught people how to buy with no money down, right? And so we actually started buying some houses. I bought a course on how to do this. I bought the Carlton Sheets course,
I was gonna
right?
mention that name. Yes, I did
Yeah,
too back
I
in the
bought
day.
Carl's course. I went through it and went, this is fantastic. Put it on my shelf, never touched it again. Right? So then some people I was lending to said, oh, you got to come. We're having a, there's an event this weekend. You should come to it. That was Ron LeGrand. So I went to Ron's. After 6 months with Ron, I bought 10 houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Problem is, I wished I'd only bought three of them.
Oh.
Yeah. Because some of you get in and you go, oh, here's what I discovered. Buying the house is not the hard part. Finishing the project. That's
Yes,
where
yes.
that's the business, right? So all that to say that, geez, I've gone down so many rabbit holes here. What was your original? Oh, we were talking about what life looked like before,
2007.
2007, and what led up to that. Yeah. So now we got all these would be, buyers have have evaporated, and they've all like taken off the buyer's hat and they put on the seller's hat. And we went from not having any inventory to having like,
Wow.
I don't know, 3 years of inventory.
Yes.
And prices just,
Oof.
they just imploded.
Yeah.
Somebody said, oh, this movie, the Big Short. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
really good. I said, yeah, let's go see it. Oh my gosh, total PTSD. I'm
Oh.
going, I remember when that company went down. I remember when that company went down. Because
Yeah, you lived
look, if
it.
anybody hasn't seen that, it's like that is a blow by blow of what happened
Yes.
with the 2007,
Yes. It's
2008 meltdown.
like I said, it's the Saving Private Ryan of the mortgage
Oh,
meltdown era.
like my skin tingles even now just talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And so we went from gosh, less than a 5% default rate and maybe a 1% actually go into foreclosure in 90 days. We'll say it's 120 days. We went to about a 75 to
Oh my
80% default rate.
gosh.
Boom. And it's like, what do you do? People calling up, Ralph, I didn't get my payment. I'm like, you think? Like, what do you?
Have you
Yeah,
seen
I didn't get mine
the
either. Yeah. Like, what do you want me to do about it? Right. So, I mean, of course, I never
Yeah,
said that to anybody.
you thought that, but that's not what
I
you said
thought
on
it,
the
but it's
phone.
like, no, listen, I would tell borrowers all the time, if you're not careful, if you don't know what you're doing, I can lend you into a hole.
Ooh.
Like, you find houses, we can do it. I can come up with the money. I have people calling me going, Ralph, I have money. Let's go find me a mortgage. I mean, it got to where it was like really cool, right? I said, but problem is, I can lend you into a hole, and I'm not at the top looking down, waving to you. I'm in the hole with you
With you, yeah.
because I told these people that I service their loan. Now, I didn't guarantee the payments, but I would help them through, and I always help them to get it resolved. Well, and as people ask, well, what if everything goes bad at once? I'm like, give me a break. Like,
What are
that can
the odds
happen.
of that?
Like, as this, right?
It kind of reminds me when I was working for Gwathmey Siegel and Associates. Now, they're among the premier architects in the world, and their private clients were Steven Spielberg, Jerry Seinfeld, Yale University. Yale University School of Architecture was one of their architectural clients, the W Hotel chain, and the United Nations. So I used to quip. I was like, look, my employers are millionaires and their customers are billionaires. The only way I could get laid off is if the entire economy crashed. Careful what you say out loud.
About that. Yeah, exactly. Our like everything went bad like at once. People are lining up going, what are you going to do? I remember having investors meeting because I'd gotten into like the house deals were small, but then we got into creating basically syndicates of investors because somebody
Oh.
would want to create a development. Hey, here's my plat. This is approved. I'm gonna ruin it. I got to put in these lots. I'm gonna put in a paper road. I'm gonna this. I'm like, okay. One person's not gonna finance all that, you know. So I
Right.
would put together teams of investors to finance this stuff.
Right.
Well, that was really cool, and it paid a lot of money. But then that deal goes right down the toilet, and now all those investors are going, hey, Ralph, what's up, man?
Right. Oh, Nelly.
There's no house to sell and get out what you can. Right? It's like,
Right, you're stuck in a potential which looked good when the market was good, and now there is no market, and there's just no there there.
right. And it used to work. The thull is, we all got lulled to sleep because from 2001 or two, basically to 2007, like you couldn't screw one up.
Right.
You could be a complete doofus and make money in real estate, you know?
Yeah.
And so even bad decisions, you were saved from the consequences of bad decisions by an incredibly good market.
Yes.
And so we were seeing 20, 25% property value appreciations per year for
Wow.
yeah,
Wow.
you apply that to the rule of 72, And,
Yeah.
you know,
Who
every
would
3 years.
want a piece of that? Yeah.
Exactly. So, and I had people who own my mortgages. They're telling their friends, they call up, hey, can I get some? Can I get some? Can I get some? Yeah. And so it was just like, this is just like mortgage. It was like nirvana
Right.
until it wasn't.
Right.
Right. Well,
Right.
then all hell breaks loose and everybody's standing with their hands out. I'm going, okay, you remember this little document we signed that said this is not FDIC insured, that this is a person promising to make you payments. They may not actually make them. And that if they don't make them, I'm not going to make them for that person. Right. But we'll help you with the steps that you can take to do and you know, whatever.
Right.
By the way, that form really saved me. I was on first name basis with the lead state investigator because
wow.
I learned what the you know state proctoscope felt like. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And here's a wrinkle. So I mentioned before we had an in-house CPA. Now, this guy was an accredited investor. He had been president of other successful companies and stuff. And we knew him from church, and he was an elder at the church.
Okay.
And we were talking about what we're doing. He goes, this is cool. So he came to work for us.
Okay.
So, you know, they say if you're in a hole, you find yourself in a hole, first thing to do is stop digging.
Ah.
Right? There's a good one. And then you need to take an honest assessment. Do a real audit of where you are. Because if you don't really know where you are, you don't know what steps to take to rectify things.
Yeah. And which way is up?
And which way is up? You gotta find the floor first.
Yeah.
Okay, this is solid ground I'm standing on. Now, what are we going to do?
Right.
So my wife and I were sitting taking inventory of all these properties that we had money on that were not complete and that basically the investors had run for the hills. And we didn't have any money to fix them, you know, and it's like, okay, where are we? What can we do? What can we salvage? What can we, whatever. And our CPA dude walks in. He's looking at the list. We got this big whiteboard of properties. He goes, oh, well, where's my stuff? Sorry. What?
So what now?
What stuff? Yeah. He goes, oh, why? Well, I have $40,000 on that house right there. You do? Well, what in the world? He goes, well, yeah, our, you know, construction guy came in. We were talking about it. He said he was running a little short. So, yeah, in the past, I've just put some of my own money in there. He finishes, and then when it pays off, I get my money back. Okay. Any other properties? Well, yeah, like all these. I got $25,000 on that one. I got like $35,000 on that. That one I got, you know. He runs down this list. He's got hundreds of thousands of dollars out on these houses.
Wow.
With no documentation.
What, handshake deals?
He just, like the guy that ran our construction company said, we need some money. He goes, no problem. I'll do it. Because you guys are good for it. Because you always pay it back. Right?
Ooh.
I said, did you get with, you know, our main paperwork, did you put a mortgage on these at least to secure the money against them? No.
My mom told me that her home economics teacher would say to them that a verbal contract isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
Right. Yes. Oh, my cheeks are turning red just thinking about this. And I'm going, okay, you realize right now that there's a first mortgage on this that was originally done. On several of them, there's a second mortgage in place to finish it, but now the person has bolted and what they gave us for that, and that, you know, that was if they did it, and now we're expected for us to do it. So the house is already upside down. There's already not enough money to pay off the recorded liens on the property.
Right.
And you have money on these things with no paperwork at all. There's no lien. There's nothing against there securing your money.
Wow.
He goes, right. So what are you going to do about it?
What are we going to do about it?
Well, let's see. I'll have to look in the closet at the shed out back and get dust off the printing press. What do you mean? What am I going to do about it? Dude. Oh, this is bad.
That's
So
crazy.
that he cracked. Like once everything came into focus, he's like, dude.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you're just beat for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So he's like, well, I'm not going to take this lying down. I trusted you guys. Well, yeah, but you got to tell us you're trusting us and what you're trusting us with. This is the first I've heard about it.
Right. And it's not you
Right?
guys, it's the people that he was lending money to with a handshake and a smile.
And like routinely, when we weren't there, we made him a signatory so he could sign off on the documents, on paperwork. So we had mortgages where he signed on behalf of the company because we weren't there to do it for the close.
Right.
And that was all fine. That was cool.
Yeah.
Well, now when the state is here with this giant, very uncomfortable proctoscope I mentioned, right? They're looking up every part of it. In fact, my wife and I were at the attorney's signing bankruptcy papers.
Wow.
Corporate bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy, like everything bankruptcy.
Right.
Of the 14 employees we had, we're down to one.
Wow.
She's from Colombia. So we're like, our phone rings while we're over in Tampa, our office is in Tarpon. It's about a 45-minute drive.
Yeah.
Hey, Faye, yeah, what's going on? She goes, there are people here with suits and briefcases and badges, and they want to come in. What do I do? Invite them in, offer them coffee, tell them we'll be there in about 45 minutes. We're on our way. So this is now we're getting into, okay, that's all the crap that happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so I we're like in total free fall financially.
Yeah.
So there was a group of guys that I would meet with breakfast. Ralph, how's it going? We're in complete total free fall. I don't have the control over anything. The entire building is on fire. It's like we're at, like in an Indiana Jones movie where he's in an
Yeah.
old stone temple and it's
Yeah.
collapsing and he's
Yeah.
trying to run and not get crushed by the giant boulders that are falling out of the
Right.
ceiling. Right? That's
Right.
this this was the and My wife had this dream. So she woke up and she said, I need to call the state. I need to let them know what's going on. Okay. My wife is an absolute artesian well of incredible wisdom, right? The Lord has just blessed her with insight and with intuition. She says, this absolute, I need to call this. So she sent an email or whether she made a phone call or what she did, but she called and said, Providence Mortgage, the name of her company, because it came about by God's providence. We're going to have to cease operations. We're filing for bankruptcy and we need your guidance. She tells the state this, right? It was that morning, six people showed up. Boom.
Wow.
You said you wanted guidance? We're here. What's go? So we found out later there's a company that I knew about that did similar kind of work down in Sarasota,
Okay.
down across the skyway from us. And one day their employees showed up for work. Keys didn't work, doors locked. They look inside the window. There's little pucker marks on the floor where the furniture used to sit. Like, oh.
Wow.
People had just boogied in the middle of the night and were gone. And
Wow.
so when investors are calling the state going, hey, what's going on with them? Their state's going, oh, we don't know. What? You know? And so when we called and said, this is what's happening, boom, they're like, we're not doing that Sarasota thing again.
That's not happening.
Yeah. So they came in, this lady introduced herself and I'm the lead investigator for the state and hi, very nice to meet you. And she says, okay, so we understand that this is what's going on here. She says, well, first of all, that puts you in a position where you no longer have the net worth to maintain your lender license. Forget what it was, I don't know, 250,000, I don't know, required net worth or whatever it was. I think it's changed. I think it's gone up significantly from
Right.
that. But she goes, So there's two ways we can handle this one. One is the easy way, and one's the hard way. Okay. The easy way is you can just give us your license. You just give it back. That's the easy way. The hard way is we can take it from you.
Oh.
And if we take it from you, that's really messy. It's really expensive. And you'll likely never be able to get another one again or work in the mortgage industry ever.
Oh.
You know. Well, that
kind of sounds like only one choice to me.
Here you go. Here's the license. No problem. You know. And she says, can we sit and talk? Yeah. So we explained to her that got the call. We were at the attorney's office. We were filing for corporate and personal bankruptcy. She puts up her hand. She says, give me just a second. She puts her head down. Wife and I are like looking at each other going, and she goes, I don't have a recorder. I'd like to record this. Man says, oh, here's a recorder. You got it? Well, I can, you'll let me use your recorder? Of course. Like, what's ever, you know, if not, you're going to run down the street and buy one. It's just sitting here. Use it. You know, she puts her head down for probably 30 seconds. And it dawned on me while I'm going, what's she doing? She puts her head up. She says, okay. First of all, I'm very sorry for what's happening here. And what you're going to be going through. It's going to be very difficult. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's going to be a hard time for you. But I want you to know you're going to come out the other side.
Wow.
And I believe that God has a plan for you. And the reason I believe that is just because how I've seen in the short time I've known you, what you did to get us here, what you shared with me, how you're conducting yourselves, how you've welcomed us in. You clearly feel like you have nothing to hide. That's very encouraging. And I'm optimistic about what will be found, but we need to go through and do our job.
Right.
But trust God on this and he'll bring you out the other side. And I believe even in a better situation. Wow. That's the lead investigator of the state.
Right, a state official is saying this to you.
Yes. I'm like, she put her head down. She was praying. That's what she did. She put her head down. She was praying. So she's the one, Marsha. Yeah, I became, you know, Marsha, what's up? Oh, she was very proper. Oh, Mr. Watkins, how are you? You can call me Ralph. I'm good with that, you know.
Yes.
But so that was, there was just a series of things like this. We call them, you know, people call them God winks, or there's God awareness encounters, or, you know, there's just a number of these things through this, frankly, years-long process where I believe God really manifests his provision. You know, we are finish up. So while the state is there doing that stuff, Mr. In-house CPA, he starts rattling gibberish. And not only to her, because she was the one there on site going over stuff, he's calling the state, talking to different departments, talking to whatever. And so a bankruptcy normally takes about 90 days.
Right.
Ours lasted like 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So all of this happens, and frankly, you know, your mind is just blown. And it's like, who am I? Gosh, I thought I had things nailed down, and now I don't have jack squat, right? Yeah. I got my house for sale, because if I don't sell it, I'm going to lose it.
Mm.
And I'm going to take the money from the sale and put it back into the business to try to resolve things for people.
Right. Right.
Yeah. As it turned out, in bankruptcy, you have a trustee assigned to your case.
Right.
And they're there ostensibly to protect the interest of the creditors. Like that's their job. Yeah. In our situation, that was not the case. It was like, okay, well, hello, Mr. Attorney for the trustee. So, by the way, right off the bat, we've got several properties here that are, there's contracts, they're ready to close. They just need the trustee to sign off on them so they can close. And then those creditors, they can be paid back and they're done. They got their money back. And, right. And at least those are off the table. No. What do you mean? No. So we're talking to our attorney. He goes, they're not going to sign that. Trustee's not going to sign that. Well, why wouldn't they sign? Because if that happens, those are gone. There's no money in it for them. They make money by recovering money, like from things that were sold. But on that real estate transaction, there's no money. They won't sign those.
Oh, because they're not so in the real estate business. They just want to get money.
That's right. And so instead of protecting the creditor and having them get their money back, the deals didn't close. The houses sat there, got vandalized and ransacked, and to heck with the investor who owned that mortgage. I went back to the airplane guy. Hey, Ralph, how you doing? Hey, good. So, love the plane. It's beautiful. It's fast. All that, just like you said. Maybe you have anybody interested in buying it? Things haven't worked out quite like we had hoped. He goes, actually, you know, I do. I do have a buyer for that.
Oh.
He says, it's a beautiful airplane. I said, I'm not even worried about getting the down payment back. Right? If you got to just sell it for what's owed on it, that's a win. Right? It's like the least of my worries.
Right.
And let me jump on that. So he calls, I got a cash buyer. They're ready to buy the airplane. Good. We'll just send it over and have the trustee sign off on it.
Oh.
Nope. I'm like, really? What are you doing? What is your purpose?
What is your major malfunction?
So the guy that ran the little base there at the airport, he calls up one day, goes, hey, Ralph, Hans. Hey, Hans. Hey, did you move the plane somewhere? Did I move it? Dude, I haven't gone anywhere near that plane. I haven't touched it. And, you know, he goes, oh, well, it's not here. I don't know where the plane is. You know, I still have my key, right? Because I was waiting for somebody to tell me what to do with it, right? Wow. So it turns out, like, Cessna, they didn't mess around. They called him. Oh, guys,
they repaid the plane.
Yep. And there's no paperwork. There's no court order. Hey, we're going to take it. No, they send the pilot down. They get in it, fly it to their own property over in Orlando. Doom, done. It's like,
wow.
I said, well, good for them. I wish my lenders could do the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. So we were. It turns out our attorney was more of a playboy than that. I mean, at one point he probably had some skills. But now he'd give it to his underlings and this and that. And it was a big hit. We interviewed several attorneys to handle this. And one says, oh my gosh, this would be the perfect case study for like a graduate level bankruptcy course.
Wow.
Just like got all the little wrinkles and nuances. Sorry about that for you, but I would love to use this to, you know, to teach people how to really handle a bankruptcy case.
Yeah.
Right. But he said, by the way, I can't take it because I got a conflict of this over here. But hey, good luck. And, you know, hope it works out well for you.
Oh, my gosh.
So our attorney that we did get, he just was not attentive. Let's just say that. That's probably the best way I can put it. And at one point he goes, yeah, by the way, the fee that you're the initial retainer. Yeah, that's all gone. So, if I'm going to keep representing you, I'm going to need another $10,000.
Oh, boy.
He might as well have said $10 million. I'm like, dude, if I had $10,000, you know, I don't know. I got nothing. He goes, maybe you want to talk to some friends or talk to his family or see what you can do. But sorry, but that's what we're going to need. I'm like, So my wife gets a text from a friend from church,
right?
And they owned an AC company, and they said, hey, we're just thinking about you guys. How you doing? Funny you should ask. As a matter of fact, you know, blah blah blah. She kind of runs through it, says, well, look, why don't you swing by, we can have a cup of coffee and maybe just pray with you or whatever, you know. I'm like, got nothing better to do, and that's a very nice offer, right? So we swing by their house. And we sit and we chat with them and just wonderful people and they lovely kids and, you know, and as we're leaving, she goes, oh, we got a little card for you. Just wanted to, so thanks a lot. So we give them hugs and we get in the car and we're driving out. She opens a card. It's a check for $10,000. What just happened? What? Okay. Tell me the Lord's not involved in this, right? It was just like we didn't ask them for it. We didn't like nothing. Boom. And
Wow.
so, yeah, there's just like what we needed when we needed it in a way that was beyond our means that we had no control over that we couldn't fix.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, well, all that's done. But, you know, so my friend, actually, that did the construction company, he came by and said, dude, you need to sign up for unemployment. Not doing unemployment. Well, why aren't you doing unemployment? Because I got two arms that aren't painted on. Okay. I can go do something, right? Other than get on a freaking government dole. Right. He goes, let me tell you something about that government dole. You've paid into it.
Right.
You have it for just such a time as this. That's what it's for.
Right.
Not so you can just rip the government off continually, but this is while you
right.
figure out what the hell you're doing.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Don't let pride cometh before a fall, as the saying goes.
Yeah, it was really great advice. And I still said, can't.
Mm.
I won't. That's like driving the last coffin in the nail that's proof positive that I'm a failure. I'm not doing it. He said, fine, give me that computer. So he reaches over, takes the computer. What's your date of birth? What's it? So I gave him, and my friend signed me up for unemployment because I couldn't make myself do it. And
wow.
Darned if that, you know, I'm like, dude, this is just, what the heck am I going to do with $250 a week? What am I going to, you know, tell you what I did with it? I bought groceries.
Yeah.
That's what I did with it. And it's like, oh, well, maybe if you get out of your own way,
oh,
Mr. Proud Bonehead, you know, yeah, there's a section I talk about in the book about how, you know, the voices in our heads, the way we talk to ourselves.
Oh, my goodness.
They were not kind.
Yeah.
As you can imagine.
Yes. And you know what, Ralph? Like I told you at the beginning of this, I usually like to keep these conversations to an hour.
Yeah.
But we are just getting started. And
yeah,
so I would like to know, because I got to hear the rest of the story. Okay, we're just really getting to the peak, if you will. So
right,
you have that link. If you can be available next weekend, I would really love to, or just whenever your availability is.
Let me check it. I may be doing, oh, wait a minute. That's next Saturday you're talking about.
No, I've got, Saturday or Sunday, yeah.
Saturday should work.
Yeah, okay.
I got the link. I'll go and book, and we'll have a part two here.
Yes, yes, because definitely, because this is we're just getting to the apex of the story, and I don't want to rush it to try to make it one episode, because
absolutely,
really, this is,
yeah, I can't believe it. Time has kind of flown.
Yes, but what you were talking about with the voice in the head, see, that's what I really am interested in looking to do with these conversations. So I noticed in the thing, you know, you said in some of your suggestions for our topics, and then the third one you said, since I analyze failure. Actually, it's not really what I do. I'm no expert on failure, than I have failed myself more times than I care to admit. I look to have an inquiry into failure, because my premise is this: failure is part of the process. You know, like I say, you know, everyone takes about a year on average to learn how to walk. And if you look at a child learning how to walk, every attempt is failure until they start walking. But they don't give up, and they don't look at it as a defeat. And my joke is that they look at us and say, well, if these big clowns can do it, I know I can do it. You know, but if children approached failure the way we tend to as a result, we'd all still be crawling on our hands and knees. Somewhere along the line, we conflate failure with defeat.
Right.
And you're just about to touch on getting over that chasm, which is why
we literally fail our way to success.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. And that's where I like to pick things up. next week, because there's so much more to the story that this is definitely a two-parter. And in closing, I just like to just thank you and thank Gemini and your gem for
making the connection.
Together. Yes, because this is so amazing. I mean, I want to get into that. I want to get into SES. I want to get into your book. I want to get into so much. And that's going to take us another hour to do.
Sure.
So, good. Folks out there.
Hey, this has been a great. Thanks.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is so great and so amazing. And I really see as you're reliving the story that I can see the emotion. It's coming back to you. It's a lot to have gone through. And I really want to get into that from the nadir coming back up into the sunshine again, digging your way out of the hole, finding which direction is up. And we're not going to do that in 5 or 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
True.
So, so thank you, first of all, ladies and gentlemen. This has been an amazing episode, and please stay tuned for part 2 of my conversation with Ralph. And remember, as I always say, life is not a competition. It is a race. If we're having a race with anyone, it's the race with ourselves. And the only person there is for us to compare ourselves to is who we were yesterday. So remember, the only defeat is not if we fail, but it's if we quit. So always keep running, never stop. And I will see you all again next episode here on The Failure Guy.